Hi, this is Jim.
And this is Max.
Check out our podcast, The Step Over, Liberty Ballers Podcast Network, for all of your Sixers needs.
Player analysis, game breakdowns, who would look coolest in a headband, and more.
Subscribe to Liberty Ballers Podcast feed on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts, and check out The Step Over, a podcast about Sixers basketball.
Mostly.
Ruiz out to get it. The throw from his knees. It's in time. And it's a no-hitter. Unbelievable. Ruiz and Halliburton.
Oh, Chase is going to keep going. And he's safe at home plate.
Wow.
Chase Utley, you are the man.
Swing and a miss. Struck him out. The Philadelphia Phillies are 2008 World Champions of Baseball.
Now batting for the Phillies, second baseman John Stolness.
Welcome to Hidden Season, your Sunday night spectacular tune-in to the Phillies podcast that is typically hosted by John Stolness and featuring two other people. But in this case, the other people will be the main feature of the podcast this evening, and John Stolness will be nowhere to be found. Where is he? What's happened to him? What's he doing right now? These are questions we cannot answer.
But are any of you confused?
We'll do our best to answer the questions we do have. I am managing editor of The Good Fight, Justin Clue, and with me is Yahoo Sports' Liz Rocher. We are sitting in the Hitten Season Studios, which is to say our two separate homes, without John Stolness tonight, who you are probably missing. But John
deserves a night off.
John deserves a night off
every now and then. The guy does a million things.
I was going to make up a nasty rumor about him, but of course Liz had to go ahead and make him out to be the good guy you all think he is, which he actually is, unfortunately. But yes, we are here to discuss all the Phillies news of the day, which is none. So have a great night, folks, and we will catch you next week on Hitten Season. No, we have plenty to discuss, obviously, with
the World Series. Just a little bit about the Phillies.
Oh, just nothing about the Phillies. And that's okay, folks. This isn't really a time of year you want to hear about. We're all in our decompression cycles on the Phillies right now. That's a pretty, very natural part of this.
The Phillies themselves are on decompression.
Yeah, exactly.
The Phillies the Phillies Twitter account has a list of current Phillies players and coaches. And I brought it up because I'm thinking I've got to find something to talk about the Phillies tonight. I bring it up and it doesn't take long to go back to literally 25 to 30 days ago. No one is tweeting anything. The person
That's
who's
really nice.
The most is hitting coach John Malley, or Malley, Don Malley. He tweets constantly.
What's he saying? Ah, damn it. Ah, crap. Damn it again.
He's linking.
I wish these guys hit better.
Posts on his blog.
Okay, well, see, now this is interesting. I would love to know what the hitting coach of the Phillies is blogging about, because, I mean, hitting, you might say, is an area where the Phillies needed to improve, and I know that doesn't fall solely on the hitting coach, and we've talked at length about what role the hitting coach really plays on a Major League Baseball team. But yeah, I mean, did you take a look at what any of the topics were that he was tackling on his blog?
Well, what is interesting about this, it's just like October 13th, it was all this day, and then his blog is not working.
Yes. If you click on the link to johnmaley.com,
it does not work. He had this. I don't understand what's happening with this page. He takes screenshots of stuff on his phone and posts it, something from 2014.
Huh. Yeah, this is interesting. He's posting blog posts that you get a no page error when you click on. And screen caps of The Athletic, with no explanation as to why he is posting them. This is very interesting. We are already on a, this is a topic you will not hear covered on any other podcast. I guarantee it. But yeah, there was a lot of activity on October 13th.
Just this one day. And then like you go back and it's July.
Interesting. Yeah.
The only other thing on the Phillies player Twitter list was Justin Bour and Rhys Hoskins and their respective wives were with Vince Papale at the Eagles game on October 7th.
I like that on October 15th, Justin Bour tweeted out a link to a charity sponsored a thing with T-Mobile that he was doing with Team Rubicon for hurricane recovery. And then right above that, Rhys Hoskins tweeted hoop season. He spelled season S-Z-N with a gif of Ric Flair doing the woo. Anyway, that's what's – we are now just reading tweets of Phillies players and coaches.
Nothing is happening with the Phillies, folks. Every player has gone dormant, though I do – I think on Odubel Herrera on Instagram, which I don't check as often as I can. Odubel Herrera on Instagram is like singing into a hairbrush and showing us the view of his incredible apartment in Philadelphia. Like he's doing – he's living right.
Yeah, no. Anything involving him obviously is a hoot on social media because he knows what he's doing. But yeah, no. I think that we promised people the most exciting Phillies offseason in ages, and we are not even done with the MLB postseason. It's not even the full on baseball offseason yet, and we're already just sitting here reading verbatim tweets by the players and coaches into a microphone and calling it a podcast. But don't worry, folks. There are much more interesting things in store moving forward. Like, for instance, finding out what the deal is with John Mayle's Twitter page. I'm now genuinely curious as to what's going on.
I knew this would get you.
Well, this is obviously the first instance of our coverage on this topic, and we will provide weekly updates as to what's going on with John Mayle's Twitter account, because I think we're all very curious to see where's he going with this? What's he building to? It's something, but we'll get to the bottom of it. In any case, Liz, the World Series is about to start, which I don't know if you've heard, but 10 years ago, this World Series included a little team called the Philadelphia Phillies. And you know what? Actually, 9 years ago, it did too. Let's not forget. But this year, of course, not the Phillies involved in the podcast. Well, in the World Series. Instead, we have a rather uninteresting matchup in the Dodgers and Red Sox. It's not even like, well, we have seen a lot of the Red Sox in the World Series over the past 10-15 years, certainly more so than you would expect for a team that was famous for not getting to or winning the World Series for so long. And the Dodgers, who last won in what, 1988, I believe. And they've been a constant, essentially, playoff presence in Major League Baseball for a couple of years now. But I don't know. I mean, I guess because these two teams get so much coverage, they're two big market teams. They didn't have uninteresting seasons. The Red Sox were almost boring good. But I don't know. Let's start with that. Let's start with the actual matchup, the franchise to franchise. How interested are you in this? Because I know we both were hoping for another matchup in Brewers A's. That obviously didn't happen right out the gate.
Or Brewers anyone.
Yeah, eventually it turned into Brewers anyone. I would have been happy with Brewers Red Sox. I'm not unhappy with this, but what's your general take on looking at a Red Sox-Dodgers World Series in 2018?
I'm fine with it. I really think it's okay. I like both teams. They're both lovable in their own way. The Dodgers are enjoying sort of the... I'd like it if they sort of turned heel. I would like it if they all leaned into the Manny Machado. I think I would like that a lot.
Somebody's got to.
Just because it would make it all so much more interesting.
Somebody's got to, right? Like, Manny's doing it all himself. He's shouldering the entire villain load all by himself. And everybody else, yeah, that's just way too likable.
Like, baseball is just starting to discover, like, hey... Our seasons are longer and more dense than all the other sports, and yet we're all real boring. We have 162 games to do weird shit on Instagram and Twitter and to, you know, post things to make each other angry and to have drama. Like, there's been a lot of drama, even just within the games, not even counting, like, all of the extraneous stuff. But there's been a lot of drama in the games. Like, this is what baseball is missing during the regular season for the most part. Like, this was a real boring season.
That's fair.
On the whole, in all of baseball. Like, the Red Sox were the best team and they were boring. And, like, you sort of knew where things were going in the American League, like, by July.
And that's what I mean by, like, if you break the Red Sox down player by player, there's a ton of exciting, cool young players on that team that are very fun to watch. But as a team, watching a team win 108 of 162 games as a non-Red Sox fan is going to get boring. As a Red Sox fan, that's a fun summer. That's a great time at the ballpark all summer long. But
do you remember 2011?
That's exactly what I'm referencing when I say that. Yes.
it was a lot of fun, but there came a point where we got kind of bored.
It was more like I felt safe to tune out, like they were going to be okay without me kind of thing.
That's fair.
It was more exciting to tune in. I honestly, for me, and then like at family events or with people would just be understanding, like, oh yeah, we got to turn the Phillies on. Not like just for Justin, but like because it was a group event to watch the Phillies because it was like, yeah, it's a good chance they're probably going to win this game.
Remember those days?
Yeah. I mean, it feels fun. Like in my head, and this can't be true, but I know it's something close to this occurred where they pretty much just won every series of the season until the end when they lost like 8 games in a row. I think after they had already clinched or something, where they were right up against clinching. But in any case, yeah, they were just winning series all the time. And I mean, watching a Red Sox team do that as a Red Sox fan is going to be a lot of fun. But also for the rest of the league, it's like, well, we got to play this team and lose. And also it kind of settles the AL East division picture pretty early on, even though there's another 100 win team in that division. So yeah. I guess that's what bores me about it. Cause I know so much about this team already. The Brewers were interesting because not only were things working out, but they're not, you know, they're a mid-market team, I think at best. And Christian Yelich really becoming the NL MVP favorite was a narrative that's certainly not implausible, but certainly not one that I think anyone necessarily saw coming in as big of a way as it did. And then like all the other things that went right for them, I think made them a much more interesting, exciting team. Plus, it's just cool to see like, oh, let's see Milwaukee win one here. Like, when's the last time you saw a Milwaukee team really like take a sport by storm?
Yeah. They've seemed sort of ragtag and, you know, weirdly disorganized in like a weird way. They just seemed different and more fun. Maybe it's just because their rotation was kind of that.
Yeah.
Maybe that's
one of those teams.
Thinking about, yeah, one of, like the Twins last year, like, how did they do that? How did they get as far as they did? Like, you look at them and you sort of think, yeah, I wonder. And it ended up betraying them in the end.
I guess if you count Green Bay in the Milwaukee sports circle, then it hasn't been that long since they had a good, you know, a team take the league by storm. But in any case, and that's why this isn't disappointing. But the reason for that, that just sort of a boring matchup to me team wise. But the reason it's not totally uninteresting or unwatchable is because of all the players that I find so eminently exciting to still be able to get to watch. Like Christian Yelich is out. All these other players that were so cool to see in the postseason are, you know, they're done, they're gone. But let's say, why don't we just each pick a player we're excited to get to keep watching for at least a few more games this season before the long onset of winter finally hits us. And why don't you go first? Because I have an answer and then I have a backup answer for when you say my answer.
So I need a player?
Yeah, pick a player on any team that you're excited to still be watching at this point.
Mm-hmm. Why is Justin Turner, I think.
Interesting.
Is
okay. Yeah, all right.
That's also wrong. It's actually
you took my answer. All right.
It's both. I don't know. Like the Dodgers are fun. Like the Dodgers are all like Yasiel Puig is a tongue wagging, crotch chopping bundle of joy.
That's how you want to imagine. He's kind of how you imagined as a kid adults playing baseball professionally. Like, why wouldn't they just be excited all the time?
Like, we need that. We need that in baseball. It's excellent and wonderful. Like, it's what makes baseball fun. Like, that's why, I mean, part of it is that everyone is watching the same thing together, which is always a great experience. But it's also, you know, just the gravitas of every moment. Any moment could be a moment when someone could, you know, can around the bases.
What about somebody on the Red Sox you're excited about?
I like Mookie Betts a lot, but who
doesn't?
Yeah,
so just take both my answers. I set you up for that by asking the Red Sox question. Yeah, but go ahead and just take both my answers.
Sorry.
That's tremendous. Get this, Liz. It's kind of, I was thinking about Dustin Pedroia the other day because I was like,
alive.
He's still on the team, right? He's still listed as part of the roster. I think he's in the dugout, right? With the Red Sox?
Yeah, he's sort of, I read something recently, like he's taken on like a very veteran-y,
sure.
Chase Utley-esque.
I was going to say Chase Utley, but not
guidance.
As good at it. Sure.
Yes. But I mean, because they are essentially the same age, I think. The same, like they are, like you look at guys like that and it's Ryan Braun is still playing, which is, or, you know, until recently.
Mm-hmm.
But he'll probably be back next year. He's still playing. You know, you look at guys like that that were in their heyday about a decade ago, and you're like, wow, they're still here.
Yeah, well, that's why.
And we have also aged.
That's what I brought him up for, because Dustin Pedroia, remember when Brandon Phillips was, he's a member of the Red Sox, according to their mm-hmm. roster list as well. I'm psyched to see. I'm trying to root for the little guys here, because obviously Mookie Betts is a tremendous baseball player who is the most fun to watch. Obviously, guys like Xander Bogaerts, Andrew Benintendi, Jackie Bradley Jr. are.
Andrew Benintendi is super fun. I enjoy him quite a bit.
Have you seen a better out to end a playoff game than that diving catch?
No.
That was
extraordinary.
Tremendous. But I'm psyched that Steve Pierce is getting another swing. Steve, former just sort of part of the Orioles mess that went to the playoffs in 2014, Steve Pierce, who actually hit 300 in the 2014 ALDS, 333 in the 2018 ALDS, and then disappeared in both, all of the Orioles disappeared in the 2014 ALCS against the Royals. They were, I don't know what the hell happened. They just all got on the bus a little early, I think. Pierce obviously is not going to get as much playing time as your Mookie Betts's and your JBJ's, but I don't know. I like seeing those big, large, blunt instruments get as many shots as they can at the sort of glory that they're never guaranteed at age 35 in the background behind guys like the ones we're talking about. And obviously Puig. Puig is fantastic to watch. But on the Dodgers, I mean, this is something someone pointed out the other day. So this is the second time Chase Utley will be appearing in back-to-back World Series, which, you know, you think about for 1 second, you're like, oh yeah. Which isn't that incredible on its own, but it is kind of like, oh crap, that's pretty cool. That's cool that gets to happen to Chase Utley, someone we know and care about.
Yeah.
But I will say, like, after we've just been talking about him, it's pretty sweet that Manny Machado is going to get a little more real estate to be this little a-hole that he's turning into. And I,
yes,
like, all right, sure, let's see. I mean, not turning into, he's obviously been kind of an a-hole for a while now. This is just a national stage for him to be that way on. And I've been having this thought that actually now I'm glad we're going to get to talk about. So obviously there's plenty of talk, plenty of issues surrounding the Machado's behavior with the Jesus Aguilar incident at first base, with a couple of takeout slides he had, some of his general behavior during the NLCS. And then for the most part, everybody's making valid points. You know, it's not an argument that anybody's going to win. It's just one that we have until the next thing comes up for us to talk about. But one of the points people were making was like, okay, then if you don't like his behavior, then especially Phillies fans, why do you excuse Chase Utley? And there's certainly points you can make to refute that, like, okay, but Chase Utley wasn't out there like kicking people in the ankles on purpose, blah, blah, blah. But certainly there's an intersection of playing style there. And my point that I'm bringing up is I think that Manny is, this is more of a theory. Manny is, he's trying to be a Chase Utley, oh, he just plays hard kind of thing, so that when he does crappy things, like he just comes across as playing the game hard, but he's just not good at it yet. He's very bad at disguising his crappiness as playing hard. And that's evident when he does things like look down and kick a guy in the shin, or more so when he's sliding into second base. Like, take those Chase Utley sliding into Ruben Tejada. He was aiming for Ruben Tejada. I'm sure he didn't want to hurt him, but getting hurt is what happens when you aim your body and moving at forward momentum. So you can be like, oh, of course I didn't want to hurt him, but the intent was to run into him, and the result of that was going to be pain. But Manny Machado's doing that, and like, first of all, he's playing in a world where the Utley rule now exists, but also he's like, his takeout slide involves, oh crap, I didn't really take him out enough. Let me just reach backwards with my entire arms and hands and try to grab at him, like, we're very evidently with my fingers. Like, come on, man. We can all see you. Like, we can see what's happening. He's just not good at, like, disguising it as, like, Chase Utley, tough play. And maybe that'll change as he gets older. Or what's more likely to happen in the short term is that the World Series will give us even more exposure to Manny Machado just being the utter villain that, frankly, the more we talk about it, the more I'm convinced baseball needs. I don't know. What do you think?
Of course baseball needs it. Baseball is terrible at marketing itself.
Baseball, like, is terrible.
Baseball's terrible at marketing itself. Because, I don't know, like, the NBA doesn't have a lot of problems because a lot of the players market themselves. There's drama in the NBA. There's heavy use of social media in the NBA. You know, it's just a lot different. The style is different. And baseball is never going to be that way. But your players need to have outward personality when the sport is happening and when it's not happening. For it to really do what they want, which is get young people into it. And Manny Machado can help that. When baseball is in the news, like, for stuff like this and not for, you know, the Astros cheating, like, you know, they're the Wile E. Coyote of cheating.
God, that was hilarious.
It's embarrassing.
We use a complex system of clapping to unravel our other team's secrets.
Well, there's clapping, and then they sent the same, you know, moon-faced goon to three different ballparks, you know, to the point where teams were calling each other to warn them. Because not only was Major League Baseball doing nothing, but the Astros were so bad at this that they're just like, can you just make sure that no one falls on a spike or something? Just make sure he doesn't hurt himself. He's going to be there. Like, God. Like, that's embarrassing for baseball.
This guy.
But Manny Machado doing that stuff, that's not embarrassing for baseball. That is interesting.
He's like, I'm going to get a terrible haircut, and I'm going to be the biggest dick this sport has ever seen. And they will remember my name.
His hair like that. Why? I get it. It's out of his face for the playoffs. And thank God, because that haircut was an abomination.
Again, I really think.
But this is worse. Like, why do we have to see your scalp?
I really think, again, it's sort of parallels the trying to be one thing, still learning how to do it, or like just going a little too hard in that direction. With the haircut, I think it was supposed to, in his head, probably like looked really good, but then whoever cut it just did it so dramatically. Like, that's, I'm not a haircut expert, but I'm pretty sure I know what was like the goal there, and it missed it by being a little too intense. But who knows, maybe that's what he wanted, and if that's what he wanted, awesome. I think that's so cool. Like, go down with that. It's better that we're making fun of him for a bad haircut than something like truly, truly awful. Well, we've talked at length about whether or not Manny Machado's behavior would affect your desire to have him on the team. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong. I think the general consensus here is it doesn't make me want him anymore. In fact, it kind of makes me want him a little less. It doesn't make me not want him at all, obviously, because he is too generational of a talent. There are certainly, obviously, crimes that a player could commit that would make me not want him on the Phillies at all. But I think that no one would not want Manny Machado to be. I think the Phillies would be crazy to discount him for this reason, or like the reasons we've seen over the playoffs. I mean, why? What do you think about the kind of stuff that's like being said by a couple of national writers who are like, "Oh, this is he's better keep an eye on this kind of stuff because he's a free agent." Do you really think that's going to stop teams from throwing the most money they can at him to get him to play for their team?
No, it's not. And you have to look at it. Like, I don't think I've actually talked about this at all because I was sick, I think, the week that this really happened. I'm not going to say that he's not a shit heel because he is. You know, he's being an enormous douche. And it's interesting, but it also can be very disruptive on a team. You have to look at the environment. The Dodgers are a hard-playing team, and they're in the playoffs, and they desperately want to win a World Series. If you put Manny Machado on the Phillies for a full season, I don't think that behavior flies. You have to look at it like put him in a different environment with different people and a different, you know, a different coach, different manager, and that behavior isn't going to fly, and I don't think they would let him continue to do it. And I think that that's just part of playing in different places. You know, if he wants to go somewhere where they're going to let that happen, then sure, you could probably stay with the Dodgers. I don't know a lot of other teams that would let a player do that long term these days.
Well, let me ask you this. This is sidestepping this issue, I suppose, because I mean, I think you're right. But obviously, there's been plenty of talk about the free agent class. We're about to see the Wild West occur in the upcoming offseason. And, you know, Manny Machado's a big one of the two big conversation points when you talk about that class. Let me ask you this, Liz. Who is someone you would be excited for the Phillies to acquire from that class that's not Bryce Harper or Manny Machado? And I don't even mean in this scenario the Phillies haven't acquired either of those players. But who would be someone who's like not even necessarily number three, just someone else that you'd be like, and again, not even somebody who would be like best for the Phillies, just a player you'd be excited to see that they had acquired from this class of people?
That's a good question. And let me bring up a list.
I love to ask you questions when I'm.
It occurred as you started talking. I'm just like, I have
when
no
I am,
idea.
I am looking. I am looking at the information, and you are not. And then I ask you a question based on the information only I am looking at. Yeah, I think that's very fair.
Steve Pierce.
Oh, Steve Pierce. Yeah, you heard about him, did you?
And he actually provided one of my favorite moments of the playoffs so far. Because after that whole Bregman Evaldi social media thing that he deleted like a doofus, leave it up there, own your stupid mistake. But after that, Steve Pierce, you know, responded, I think, to WEEI and said, why does he have to do that? That's a douchebag thing to do, essentially. And then he homered in that game right in Alex Bregman's
face. That's awesome.
Right in his face, he homered and sent them home. Suck it, Astros. Suck it forever. I am not seeing a lot of games.
Right?
There's Adrian Beltre,
Liz,
but he's probably going to retire.
You suck so much tonight. You are taking all of my answers. That was exactly who I was going to say. I don't even care. Yeah, he's probably going to retire. He wouldn't be good. The Phillies, you know, I guess they're not. They have an opening at third base. Yeah,
he
but like, how's he
DH.
Gonna play?
There
yeah, how
is
that?
DH.
Yeah, I just want to see him again because I think he's awesome and like as a player, just one of the most fun players to have watched over the past decade. And yeah, I mean that's what I mean when I say just like I'm like, oh, Adrian Beltre, yeah, awesome, get him over here, absolutely. How about Genmar Gomez, Liz, or Aaron Loop, perhaps?
Why?
We were promised this free agent class was the sexiest ever.
No, people say they're saying that because those guys are literally the youngest. Everyone else I'm looking at, I'm just like, oh God, Michael Brantley's going to be a free agent. Oh God,
you
Michael
know what
Brantley's
I think
32.
Might have, and I'm not saying this isn't full of valuable pieces. I think, you know, obviously most of these guys are going to find jobs. We've been talking about
Adam
this free
Jones.
Agent class for 5 years. Maybe. Talking about Adam Jones, Jonathan Lucroy, Joe Mauer, hell, even Mark Reynolds, Hanley Ramirez, 5 years.
Tim Howard's retiring too.
5 years ago is like, oh man, that's a huge, that's a stacked class. And now it's 5 years have gone by, or even less, a couple of years have gone by. Things can change in one season, let alone several. So like, we may have been jacked up about this, this free agent class for a while because the names in it at the time we were talking about it so prematurely were really exciting. And now it's like, oh, yeah, that guy's retiring, isn't he? Or like in Major League, this guy here is dead. Like, cross him off then.
It's literally two guys and then a whole bunch of last year.
Patrick Corbin.
Guys, all, I mean, there are
that's an interesting name.
An extraordinary number of guys. Like, first baseman, free agent first baseman, Steve Pierce, 36, Joe Mauer, 36, who's probably retiring, Matt Adams, 30, Mark Reynolds, 35, Lucas Duda, 32, Hanley Ramirez, 35. This is why no one is going to sign a lot of these. And like, some of these guys will find jobs, of course, but no one wants to sign these guys.
Here's a-
because all they want are young guys who are in their own system, who are in systems. Like, this is, it's going to be so interesting to see what happens.
So many.
To 40-year-old Peter Moylan.
So many of these guys. Almost all of them are in their mid-30s.
Because this is when you hit free agency. Yeah. You sign a couple of 1 to 2 year deals. Mm-hmm. You hit free agency. When you're, like, this is, like, last year was crazy. This year is going to be really interesting to see what happens. Whether major league teams loosen it up after what happened last year, or if they keep going the same way they did and sign almost no one. You know, so like it being like pulling teeth to get anybody on a contract because no one wants to sign, you know, 32-year-old Jeremy Hellickson.
You know, people have been saying, is Manny Machado costing himself with his antics in the playoffs because, you know, he's going to be a big free agent. You know who's possibly really been doing damage to himself, who is also going to be a free agent, is Yasmani Grandal.
Oh!
Who is 30 years old and, you know, yeah, no, 30 years old and had 3.6 WAR in the regular season this year. And has had just about the most awful NLCS performance I possibly, you know, that on recent memory. You know, I remember during the ALCS at one point, Martin Maldonado, the catcher for the Astros, was letting a few pitches go by, screwing up a little bit. And AJ Hinch came out to talk to his pitcher and chewed up his catcher while he was at it, just because he was like, "Will you catch the ball, please?" And I was like waiting for something like that to happen for Grandal, who was just he looked totally outmatched by the general playing of baseball while he was out there, which was just, I don't know. I mean, I forget which exactly game that was of the NLCS, but he looked absolutely like he had no idea. Like, they had handed him that catching gear that day and he was just like, what the hell is that? Yeah. Well, playoffs are over. Free agency is on its way. All we got between us and that is a World Series. So with the playoffs behind us, Liz, let's, I know you mentioned the social media battles going on during the playoffs, but what would you say your favorite on-field moment was from the 2018 playoffs, or any point from way back in, let's even count game 163 as part of that. What would you call your favorite?
Gosh, I don't, the game six, but the Brewers had a lot of really good ones. The crowd was super in it. It was the first game back. Seeing Manny Machado get booed into next week was, I feel like this was a special moment where you see an entire stadium of people joined together for literally 5 solid minutes of booing. They did not stop. They stopped only to cheer when he would get a strike or an out.
That's beautiful.
It was beautiful.
I think as,
That was a great moment. I'm trying to think of other specific ones. I know there's some great, like, game seven is like fresh in my head. That catch.
Oh, obviously.
That, what is his name? Charlie something?
Wait, which catch are you talking about?
Oh, the Dodger. I'm talking about, well, there's the, you know, the non-catch in the Astros game, but I'm talking about in the Dodgers game. The, that's center fielder, right fielder that made that insane catch on Christian Yelich.
Culberson?
thing that probably would have won the game for
Charlie
the Brewers.
No, he's on. No, he's,
thank you.
He's on the Braves now. I'm sorry.
Whoever it is, it doesn't matter. The guy with the weird beard. I could see him in my head. But yeah, that was incredible and obviously made a huge impact on me since I can exactly remember.
Yeah, there were some pretty spectacular defensive plays. Obviously the first thing that jumps out is Mookie Betts jumping into the stands and that bizarre play that we talked about also at length, I believe on Continued Success, where it just reintroduced the idea that there's always going to be chaos in baseball and you're never going to be able to have a full control over it. And that was great. Personally, I took great satisfaction and saw great humor in the Cubs losing game 163 in Chicago and then losing the single game elimination wildcard game the following night. I thought that was, oh man, that sucks. Like, I don't think something...
Cosmic justice.
I felt like it was a very isolated case of repeated misery in all of baseball as fans. Fans of every team except one feel immense disappointment at some point during the season. And this case was like, obviously they didn't get eliminated from game 163, but I think, you know, it was played at Wrigley Field. They were playing a team I'm sure they could beat, and they certainly could have beaten, but they lost at home and then got eliminated the next night on another one game playoff. And it was just, it was so abrupt. And it was so unceremonious and anticlimactic for the 2018 Chicago Cubs. And that was a real kind of set the tone. But I got to say, you can probably skip over. I mean, there were some cool moments, but you can probably skip over the NLDS round or the divisional series round for both leagues because they were both settled really quick. And I was talking to Trevor about this and on the Dirty Inning, and he said he liked how quickly that passed by. I got to be honest. I like when things are more of a mess. I like when things are going long. And I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah. Like, I didn't watch a single, like, the Astros and Indians played. I didn't watch a single game because it was three games and it was over. And we were in and out of town for a wedding. And, you know, it was all just happening. I'm like, all right, well, like, by the time we got back, the Indians had almost been eliminated. I'm like, well, like, why am I even going to bother? They're losing. They're completely going to lose. Like, it was good that it was done quick, but I was disappointed that more games, more series didn't go longer, you know, for the most part. It would have been nice to see, you know, some full length series. We've only gotten one so far. Though I can't say I'm disappointed that the Astros were eliminated fast. That's my favorite moment, watching the sad Astros.
Yeah, I got to say, that series really felt like it was longer than it was. That really seemed like, for whatever reason, it was a seven-game series, kind of trapped in the body of a...
Because so many of the games lasted forever. That Mookie Betts catch game was a million years. There's a universe. It's still going on.
Jason Stark was tweeting about how many innings in a row there had been in that series where someone had gotten on base. There'd been so few 1-2-3 innings, and that, yeah, obviously led to the games going on forever. But yeah, that was, that one felt, I'm glad the Red Sox won. I think the Astros cheating thing coming to light was also a very fun narrative twist for me. I felt like that was it always sounds so hilariously inept when an exposed cheating scandal is explained, and the clapping, that really stands out at baseball's inept little, like, this isn't a big deal, this doesn't happen all the time, this is fine. I mean, what do you teams are always trying to steal each other's signs and like get a leg up. I believe that is happening.
Paranoia at this point. Like, that's why I keep reading. Is there, like, it's paranoia. I think it was like this last year in the playoffs, which is why I kept taking so long. There were mound visit after mound visit. I think that the mound visit rule was inspired specifically by the playoffs last year, because there's really no way it saved any time during the regular season. Because it didn't. The game lengths, I think games shortened up a matter of, I think, just a few minutes this year from last year. So it didn't really make a difference. It was specifically, I think, for the playoffs, which is why there's so many cross-ups and issues with catchers, because the signs keep changing because everyone is paranoid. Everyone's paranoid. The only team that has done it right was the Red Sox last year with the Apple Watch. That was a relatively slick operation, you know, save for the fact that someone got caught wearing it in the dugout. Like, yes, granted, that's always going to be the downfall. But, like, this Astros, like, they absolutely were not in any way sending a dude to every stadium and making sure that no one else was cheating. That's ridiculous. You don't send someone to make sure you're not being, you know, cheated. You send someone to cheat. It is embarrassing. It is hilarious. It is, the, you know, they're the Acme.
And just... Just a couple of years ago, we were sitting here like, oh, yeah, you feel bad for these hapless Astros because the Cardinals hacked them and they're just the bottom of the NL. So, yeah.
Never did I feel that way ever. Get hacked, idiots.
I will say, and, you know, this is Jason Stark fact theater here, but Jason Stark also points out Clayton Kershaw threw the last pitch of a series that sent his team to the World Series. And the first pitch of their regular season. And that's the first time that that has ever happened since divisional play began, which is, yeah, that is pretty cool. That's a little, would you say remarkable? I guess it's a little coincidental, but also cool.
Yeah. But he's another player I'm mm-hmm. happy to see. I'm happy to see him in the playoffs. Him and David Price deserved the redemptions that they got because they're both much better than they've shown in the playoffs. It's just sort of, you know, I have no idea why it happens to some players, but they both defeated it. Like when Kershaw went out in the ninth inning of game 7, I really thought that I'm like, this is when he gives it all up. This is when he coughs it all up. Cause this is how it's always gone. And then he pitched clean and the game ended. Like, he deserved every ounce of redemption, and I hope he continues. I hope they both continue to get it in, you know, the World
Series.
That
is such a thing in the playoffs, going to your, you know, your ace starter to finish off a game as, like, the ultimate sign of, like, okay, everybody, anything goes. You're throwing every weapon at the problem. And I remember the Phillies version of that was, I think, bringing in Roy Oswalt against the Cardinals or against somebody that they were up against limit. Yeah. And he, you know, he didn't do great and allowed some runs. That's such a strange niche thing in baseball to see. And more, I feel like so much more often than not, it does not play out the way you would think. Like, it's those guys who wind up losing the game. And I don't know what it is, because Price and Kershaw are guys who that have happened to on a, you know, on the scale of them actually starting the games, but it can't, I mean, it's tough to imagine those two guys who certainly pitch in big games during the regular season and come through all the time getting completely overwhelmed and torpedoed by the idea that they're pitching in the playoffs. It's just tough to, like, I know it's different and there's a level of intensity, but as professional baseball pitchers, imagining them being so flummoxed by the concept of having to pitch in the league championship series that they just can't do it, that they just pitch really poorly, way lower than their typical skill level. I don't know. It seems impossible, but I mean, you know, with athletes, you can get stuck, you can get all in your head about it. You can get the yips. But it's just, I find it so hard to believe that narrative that forms all too easily. You know, it's such a limited sample size most of the time. So yeah, I agree. It was great to see those two guys both get a chance and succeed in making that narrative not a thing anymore, which, yeah, that's deservedly so. So yeah, that's where we are with the playoffs at this point. I'm willing to tune into the World Series. Definitely. I'm curious. One thing I always think with the Dodgers, I don't want Tommy Lasorda to be happy. So that does suck.
No,
to think about the Dodgers winning. And at this point, you know, getting upset about Red Sox, like Boston sports fans having something else to brag about, it's all kind of part of the same globby assimilated mess of Boston sports glory that has defined this era in sports tragically. So
I assume that most of the time when they're talking, they're bragging about some sports accomplishment or another. I've really just learned how to tune it out.
Exactly. It's all part of the same thing, you know, and this stuff fades pretty quick. Like, it's been 10 years since the Phillies won the World Series, and that was 5 minutes ago. So, yeah, it would just give a couple years. Boston will catch a few bad breaks. Tom Brady will take the wrong water pill or whatever it is that he does. And, you know, you never, they'll be a non-factor before you know it. So it's all, that doesn't bother me as much anymore. We're across the threshold with them. They can brag all they want because it's been a phenomenal stretch of years for Boston sports.
Yes.
So them winning again would just be another mark. That's fine. But yeah, I'm psyched. I'm psyched to see how this plays out. Meanwhile.
Yeah. Wait, I want to say one more thing. I wanted to talk a minute about a narrative I've seen from Dodgers fans. I saw this, someone retweeted this into my timeline. Someone saying, you know, I don't want to hear anything about, you know, the Dodgers being a high payroll team, you know, or two high payroll teams playing because, you know, the Red Sox are playing paying the competitive balance tax this year and the Dodgers, you know, are not. And I'm like, the Dodgers have the third highest payroll in baseball. Like, so they both teams desperately want to think of themselves as underdogs, and it's one of them. You can find ways to do that for both. The best way to do it for the Dodgers is to point out that in May they were 9 games out of first place.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, they had a.
They were 9 games out of first place in May and spent a total of 42 days, I think, total in first throughout the whole season. And they're in the World Series. That's how you're underdogs. Your payroll is enormous. Anyone using that narrative is stupid. And if you see them do it, make them stop. It is a horrible rewriting of actual facts because that is just not true. Good Lord.
That's a great.
I had to share that. It was bothering me. Ugh.
No, I'm very glad you brought that up because, I mean, let's ask this question then. Is it possible to have a World Series without an underdog? Because I think this is one of those.
It is absolutely this. There are no underdogs. They are both teams with a lot of who spend a lot of money. They're teams that have traded for big names. Like, the Dodgers are not underdogs. They traded for Manny Machado.
Exactly.
Manny Machado is on their team now. You are not underdogs. Red Sox have the MVP and Chris Sale on their team. They are not underdogs either, so they can both shut up.
We've seen at least one writer try and make the argument that the Red Sox were underdogs when they were playing against the Yankees.
No.
Presumably just because they were playing the Yankees. Again, no. This is a team that thunderstormed through the American League this year without ever really hitting a rough patch. That team is not an underdog. And I agree. The Dodgers are not underdogs. I'll go a step further. What's so appealing about being the underdog? Is it because if you're the team that everyone expects to win, there's like less of a chance you're going to win? I don't know, man. I think in some cases, the charming team that's not supposed to, like, that just doesn't exist every time. And if you can be the giant, titanic, sinister, money-throwing, affluent team franchise that just destroys everyone and just rumbles through the league like a bulldozer, like a bulldozing war machine, then be that. And like, what isn't that what every underdog would want to be if they could? Like, underdog is the team that you expect to lose, and most of the time does. That's what sucks about being an underdog. Winning as an underdog is deeply cathartic, but it's just not what happens every time.
I have a theory. I think it's because being an underdog makes your team worthier of winning. Because if you were supposed to win, how are you worthy of it? If you weren't supposed to win and you earned it, you know, by being better than the best team.
I see. So you're saying this is like a narrative component to this that's more satisfying to people.
Exactly.
Like, oh, yeah.
It makes them feel like it's okay for them to root for their team.
Right. Okay. That makes sense.
You see what I'm talking about? That's what I think, because they don't want to admit, yes, the team that I love is an absolute monster. I expect them to win. So should you. They are so good. They deserve it. They are the best team. For some reason, no one wants to say that. I had no problem saying that whenever the Phillies were. I mean, in 2011, I got my heart stomped on because I went in, not because, but I did go in thinking They are the best team. They've won the most games. They have very few weak spots. They're going to win. The Cardinals suck. This is not going to happen.
Yeah, they went all in. It will be disappointing if they do anything but win it all.
And that's also a component.
And it was disappointing. And maybe part of it is that if you're an underdog, fans, other fans of the sport may feel bad for you when your team loses. If you're the 2011 Phillies or the 2018 Red Sox or Dodgers, that's the whole argument we're making here, and you lose, no one's going to feel bad for you because a ton of people hate the big market Dodgers. A ton of people hate the big market Red Sox. That's just not – I think you can also trace this back to when you are negative about your team, then when they are good, it's a pleasant surprise. And when they are bad, you can say, I told you so.
Yes.
If you are hopeful and excited, then you have this chance of being disappointed.
Welcome to the 2018 Phillies, man.
Yeah, you'll have more fun, but you'll also, you know, that's the gamble you take. If you're opening yourself up to be more excited about a team, you're also opening yourself up to be more disappointed.
Yes, it shields you from disappointment. That's exactly right. I think it's a combination of factors. And I think, you know, in the playoffs, this underdog mentality is about all of that. You know, I think it's why both teams have had, you know, have a history, at least the Red Sox. You know, there are some fans out there who are still dealing with the pre-2004 history inside themselves, but there are a lot more fans now that don't even remember that. They don't remember a time when the Red Sox were the perennial sad losers. They don't remember that.
I don't really. Yeah, I don't really. I don't really. I mean, I know we're coming from the NL West has never been as solidified a picture as the AL East, certainly as far as the hierarchy goes, but the Dodgers have been a huge presence in baseball and playoff baseball for a while now. Like we suffered through those even year Giants debacles, and there's obviously been a couple of other instances, but the Dodgers, you know, like we keep saying, they're a big market team. They kind of stand out because they're a West Coast big market team, and yeah, there's just you're rooting there for a team that is doing. They're fine. The Dodgers will be fine. They still, to me, feel like
actual celebrities as fans, you know, not the Bradley Cooper, David Boreanaz level celebrity. We're talking, you know, we're talking the longtime host of Entertainment Tonight has a front row seat to every Dodgers game. Barry Hart is always there. Jason Bateman is at every Dodgers playoff game. Every single time there is a playoff game at Dodger Stadium, there are at least five or six commercial breaks where they go into or come out of it focusing on an actual legit movie star.
Here's some information on this. Yes, you're absolutely right. Legit movie stars rooting for the Dodgers. Obviously, they're in LA. But like teams like the Red Sox and Yankees, they're high profile enough that they also have plenty of celebrities. Yankees elimination game, we got to see a bunch of bummed out celebrities just like on their phones while
great.
The Red Sox were winning.
God, I highly enjoyed
Billy Crystal
that.
And, you know, all that. Yeah. That's what's sort of hilarious about imagining the Brewers in this matchup. Kato Kaelin is the Brewers celebrity fan. Like that's, I don't know who else could you even generate? Certainly not offhand. Let's, are you able to come up with anything? But you know,
we should all Brewers, count. We should all count our lucky stars that the Phillies didn't make it to the playoffs. We'd be subjected to Phillies celebrity fan Miles Teller,
Tina Fey. Big
She's
Philly
not
sports.
Really. No, Miles Teller goes to games and is an enormous dork about it, and he's a huge douchebag, and the Phillies need better celebrity fans.
Well, yeah, that's I think that's what we're dealing with here. We're dealing with a World Series in which there's no easily rootable team here. That's where I keep going back to. Like, I want to see the players, the teams as franchises I'm not interested in, and the fans of both teams also, I feel, in both cases don't deserve it, but the players themselves are exciting to watch, which is I guess where we have to land as objective baseball viewers with our team eliminated and the chips kind of just falling as they may. So World Series, yes, I suppose we are both looking forward to it. In any case, Liz, we only got a couple minutes left here. Before we go, I want to touch on one Phillies related component, and that's that the Arizona Fall League started. And you and I are not some of the more brilliant prospect minds who operate in Phillies circles. Certainly we are all aware of the work of Matt Winkelman and others who operate more in the prospect circle of Phillies analysis. But this is going on right now. The Phillies have sent their contingent of prospects out to Arizona to play against all the other teams, groups of five or six lower level prospects. A lot of the Phillies guys are from Redding. I think at least one of them is from Lehigh Valley. And every year it's the same six teams, but the team your team's prospects get assigned to is going to be different. And this year, the Phillies are on the Scottsdale Scorpions, those famous Scottsdale Scorpions. Liz, would you ever order, this is an offhand question because you could possibly do this, would you ever order Arizona Fall League team memorabilia, like a Scottsdale Scorpion hat?
Sure, I would do that. I mean, coincidentally, my fiance, his favorite player in the minors right now is a Brewers prospect named Keston Hira, who played for his alma mater, University of California at Irvine, UC Irvine. Go Anteaters.
Of course.
Or something.
Of course he has a
favorite. And Keston Hira, I think, is actually the top player in the AFL right now. He's been absolutely killing it. I've been looking for a Keston Hira jersey of some kind to get him for Christmas.
What are you doing? Does he not listen to this podcast? What are you giving away? Okay. That's understandable. That stings, but I get it.
He lives with me. He hears me talk about baseball in his face all the time. He has enough.
He sits next to me patiently while I record this podcast. So he gets it live. But yeah, the Arizona Fall League goes till about mid-November. They'll have the championship game on November 17th. They have the Fall Stars game on November 3rd. But until then, Phillies prospects will be playing as members of the Scottsdale Scorpions out there in Arizona. Couple of tidbits I wanted to convey. Liz, the manager of the Mesa Solar Sox is none other than former Phillies catching prospect Lou Marson, who was traded.
Oh my God.
Who was traded. I believe was that either Cliff Lee or Roy Halladay deal that he was included as the,
it had to have been Cliff Lee. Cause I remember the prospects in the Halladay.
Yeah, trade. It was. Cause he went to Cleveland, of course. Yeah. He was traded with, here's some names for you. Jason Donald, Carlos Carrasco, and Jason Knapp to the Cleveland Indians
Oh my God.
Cliff Lee and Ben Francisco. But yeah,
hey, Ben Francisco. Oh, God, it's like I've gotten into a time machine.
Lou Marson is the acting manager of the Mesa Solar Sox. So he's got all the Tigers, A's, Angels, Cubs, and Red Sox prospects he's dealing with. Another little tidbit, the surprise Saguaros roster. First of all, their manager's name is Stubby Clapp. I just wanted to share that. He seems like he played like 23 total games in the major leagues. For the Cardinals.
That's fabulous.
He seems awesome. But their pitching coach is none other than Brian Hickerson. Liz, do you remember Brian Hickerson?
No.
Brian Hickerson was the pitcher for the San Francisco Giants. And you're going to remember this because I believe you and I have talked about this on a podcast. He was pitching for the San Francisco Giants in 1993 when the Giants went up about 8-0 on the Phillies. And Wes Chamberlain made first solid contact of the night against Giants pitching. It hit a line drive, but it happened to be right back at the pitcher. Brian Hickerson caught the ball and spiked it into the ground in a ridiculous show of in your face. And from that point forward, it kind of like lit the fire under the Phillies, and they came back to win that game 9-8. And I will never forget. I'll never forget that he spiked the ball after catching it, which like. Players flip bats and do ridiculous stuff in the league now, but that's something I have not seen another pitcher do ever, and it has stuck with me since my childhood, since I originally saw footage of it, which that just was ridiculous. But in any case, one of the Phillies prospects, Liz. I mean, you and I were certainly aware of Phillies prospects, what the general status of their farm system is, who their top people are. But Arizona Fall League, that's a deep cut. It can be a deep cut.
It's a deep cut. This is for you ultra super duper fans out there. Like, I mean, if you'd like an idea of how much Sean, my fiance, loves Keston here, he's like looking around, like, are they televised anywhere? I'm like, no, it's the Arizona Fall League.
I think somebody's dad is Facebook living it, if you want to jump on that.
I'm just like, probably. Like, no, that is not happening. Like, it's super, yeah. Like, you care, we care in that, like, these are, you know, some of them are players that we hope could contribute to the Phillies in the next couple of years. Like Sixto Sanchez is a name that I know is there.
And nope.
People tell me he's very good.
He's not there, Liz. It was
Oh God, you're right.
He got bounced. There. That would have been big news, but no, unfortunately,
yes, you're
because
right.
of because of an injury, he actually was held back from the Arizona Fall League, which left the pitching prospects Sanchez-less. But something I wanted to point out was that Phillies prospect pitchers, Luke Leftwich, Tyler Visa, Seth McGarry, and Jonathan Hennigan have combined to allow only a single earned run, I will say, throughout their tenure this year. They've only been, you know, they've only appeared in like 2 to 4 games each, but you know, one earned run among all of them. That's pretty cool. Or pretty good, at least. And Luke Leftwich, especially, has been performing really well. He's thrown 5 2/3 innings. He's only allowed 3 hits and 2 walks, and he's had 8 strikeouts with, again, no earned runs. And Tyler Visa, I wanted to mention because he's one of the only ones who didn't pitch in Reading this year. He pitched in Lehigh Valley. He's gotten 7 innings so far, only allowed 3 hits and 1 walk and no earned runs. So, you know, this is a showcase mostly for the clubs to see their own prospects. So, you know, if a guy really tears the cover off the ball, it's probably something for fans to notice. But this is, yeah, there's a reason this is difficult to find as a broadcast, at least. The last thing I wanted to say about the AFL, Derek Hall, Philly's first base prospect, who spent the year in Clearwater and Reading. He's hitting .292 in 6 games. He's got 7 hits, 2 home runs. So he's probably their best offensive asset out there right now. Nobody else is really. Archimedes Gamboa is out there, who is notable to me largely because his name is Archimedes Gamboa.
Archimedes Gamboa, and it's spelled with a Q.
But I am familiar with him, yes. And he's his numbers aren't solid so far, but you know, they've played like only a couple of games. But that's happening out in the desert, and that's kind of the most active component of Phillies baseball right now. Until the offseason starts and things really go crazy. I know it's a couple of teams that didn't have managers, hired managers recently, but the Phillies, you know, I don't want to say dormant, but quiet for the time being.
No, they're dormant. Yeah.
They're back in their sleeping pods.
Hibernating. They're hibernating until, you know, nothing happens until the World Series is over in baseball. Like, people have been hiring and firing managers, and that's really the only thing that's kind of allowed. You know, player moves are made. Of any kind. And so it's just sort of everything is in suspended animation until, you know, the World Series friggin' ends.
And only a couple of precious games left. So treasure baseball while you can in 2018, and then it'll be off to the races for the offseason. But that'll about do it for this episode of Hittin' Season. We, of course, appreciate you tuning in.
I'm Michael Kist of Bleeding Green Nation, and I invite you, gentle listener, to join us for the best analysis of the Super Bowl champion Philadelphia Eagles in the business. BGN Radio provides you with the most informative preview shows, and the Kist and Solak show dives deep into all the scheme and X&O details you could ever want. Plus discussions with the industry's brightest minds, including former NFL players, and press conferences from the Eagles coaching staff to keep you up to date and informed every step of the way. Subscribe to Bleeding Green Nation today. Fly, Eagles, fly.